This is the Brooks Robinson interview conducted by Dane Rataske and Ben Nichols, McDonough students. It is May the 6th, 2003.
Today is Tuesday, May 6th, and this is Ben Nichols and Dane Rataske's interview with Brooks Robinson. Okay, just to give you some background, our class reads literature and baseball. We've read we're reading Boys of Summer right now, going with Brooklyn Dodgers.
Good,
and we read, what was the other
Fences.
One? Fences,
Glory
of Light, and Glory of the Times.
Okay.
And that we take the issues and then we relate them to life, basically, because our teacher's a strong believer that baseball has relates to many aspects of life.
Good.
And I guess we'll get started.
Okay.
I guess one of the main things we've been doing in class lately is leadership in baseball, and I guess how you can relate it once you're past your baseball career into your work career. I remember reading that you're at Central Petroleum, your assistant.
Yeah. Well, my last year to play was 1977. I was a player coach that year. I didn't play much, but I retired. And not knowing really what I wanted to do. I had several offers at the end of my career to manage in the big leagues and turned them down. I really wasn't interested in that. I talked to a couple of colleges about college baseball, and I had an offer to be the coach of Southwest Louisiana in Lafayette, Louisiana, assistant AD, athletic director and baseball coach. And I ended up not doing that either, but I had a lot of things happen to me right after I got out of the game, and I was not knowing what I was going to do. But I had a relationship with Crown Central Petroleum going back to 1964 and making appearances at the stations that they opened. And then when I retired, I did get a little more involved with Crown Petroleum. My title down there was assistant to management. And we have the Crown High School All-Star Game, which a kid from your school had participated in. We have a Brooks Robinson Crown Golf Tournament that raised money for Johns Hopkins Children's Center. And at that particular time, Crown Petroleum owned all their stations, and I was able to go out and talk to the attendants and try to instill in them the fact that, hey, you're the one that bring people back to the pumps. And it's not the president and CEO, but you're the one who has hands-on. You see people when they come in, treat them courteously. Courteously. And anyway, that's kind of what I was doing. I was a PR guy at Crown Petroleum. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that, but anyway, that's really what I started doing. And there were a lot more opportunities that came up. I went to work for a lot of speaker bureaus, giving little motivational speeches, trying to draw some parallels between successful baseball teams that I played on, successful business teams that I've been able to gain a little insight into, and to carry a little further, successful players that I had played for, what made them successful, and successful business people. And there was a lot of similarities, you know, and I talk about what motivated me to play as long as I did. I talk about teamwork, and I'm still doing that. So I've had a great time since I retired. I mean, I guess it's 25, 26 years ago.
What started your interest in baseball? Some people, it's been, you know, it's a childhood dream, and they pursue it since they're children and playing in the sandlot. And some people, you know, their coach gets them started in high school, and it wasn't really something they ever really thought about.
Yeah, you're right. That's the only thing I ever wanted to do. My dad was a terrific semi-pro player back in Little Rock, Arkansas. I ended up going to the same high school that he attended. Played on the same American Legion team that he played on. I was a bat boy for two or three of his teams when he played. He was a fireman. He was a fireman for over 30 years in Little Rock, but I was a bat boy for the fire department team, and then that was a softball team. Then he played baseball on another team called Riverside Nursery, and I was a bat boy there. So I just grew up around it, and I never wanted to do anything in my whole life except be a professional baseball player. I remember in the eighth grade, I wrote a booklet, My Vocation, what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I wrote it being a professional baseball player, and had to put the hours and the money and put pictures in there, and I got a great grade on it too, so I was happy about that. But that was really my dream as a youngster. And when you get to be 15 or 16 or 17, you know, you're pretty presumptuous, you know. I'm saying, well, I'm going to be a big league baseball player, and not realizing that the fatality rate is enormous. I mean, of 100 guys that sign professional contracts, I think maybe one or two ever make it to the major league. So you can see that the fatality rate is very enormous. And I was lucky. I did some things real well, but I was very lucky. No one gave me a lot of money. In my day, if you got more than $4,000, you were considered a bonus player, and you had to go directly to the major leagues for 2 years. And I've never seen a kid come out of high school and be able to play in the major leagues outside of a pitcher. I've never seen an infielder or outfielder. So right off the bat, you get the money, but it puts you behind everyone else. Well, they offered me $4,000. And a major league contract. I went to York, Pennsylvania, and I played with guys my own speed. And it was a learning process. But I signed with Baltimore, which was the right decision. Paul Richards, I like Paul Richards, and he sold me on the fact that, hey, if you got any ability, you're going to get a chance to play in the big leagues in a hurry here because we're not very good. And they came to Baltimore after the 53 season. They were the old St. Louis Browns. And then... and they lost 100 games in 54, and then I signed in 55. When I think about it, I've seen just about every player in the history of these Orioles come through the Orioles. I've been here longer than anyone else almost. But anyway, after my season was over at York, Pennsylvania in 1955, the Orioles brought me back to the big leagues, and I played 2 weeks in the big leagues when I was 18 years old. So I got that chance to play very early.
Who were some of the toughest pitchers you ever faced in your career?
Well, I faced a lot of tough pitchers. Sandy Koufax, Juan Marichal, Gaylord Perry, Ferguson Jenkins, these are guys. Tom Seaver, all these guys are in the Hall of Fame. They were great pitchers. But if I had to pick two guys who were the toughest on me, I would pick a guy I know you guys never heard of, a guy named Frank Leary. He used to pitch for the Detroit Tigers. They call him the Yankee Killer because he beat the Yankees every time he pitched against them. But I couldn't hit him either. And there was a guy named Earl Wilson who pitched for Boston and Detroit. He's now the president of the baseball assistance teams, which helps indigent players. They raise money for players going back many, many years who have had some tough times or need some help along the way. And those two guys I couldn't hit. And they were basically the same type pitchers. They throw the ball hard in here and they little quick breaking balls away. And they were like one pitch ahead of me all the time.
Do you have any specific memory from the pros that you could?
Well, my favorite memory was winning the World Championship. I mean, when you talk about, as a youngster, you dream about, hey, I'm signing a professional contract. Man, this is just unbelievable, you know. And then you think about, well, you play in the minor leagues, and you get to the big leagues, and you win the pennant, and you become the World Champions. That's what it's all about. And, I mean, it's not easy to win. When you think of all the great players in my day and going way back who never got to a World Series, I mean, there's many, many Hall of Famers that never got a chance. That's the one thing they say, hey, I've missed that. That's the one thing I miss in my career. But the nice thing about it is every guy on that team, you think about every guy on that team and a big smile comes to your face and you have pleasant memories about the whole year and how it was to be the world and bring the first World Championship here to Baltimore in the American League. And we were close in 1960. We had a chance in 60. That's kind of the year we started to get pretty good. And then we almost, in 64, we went right down to the wire and lost by one or two games to the New York Yankees. And then after that, we got in the World Series in 69, 70, 71. And of course, they got in two more after I left in 79 and 83.
During the World, was it the 1970 World Series where you made that throw to catcher's box or in the coach's box?
Yeah, I always kiddingly say that's the year I turned the big red machine blue, you know. But that was a very unusual World Series. I tell people I played almost 23 years professionally, and I don't think I ever had five games in a row like that, and it happened to be the World Series. I mean, as an infielder, you can play a week and never get a chance to do anything spectacular. And in this World Series, every game, I had some chances to make good plays, and I was also hitting well, and we beat Cincinnati in five games in that particular World Series. But very unusual. to have that happen to me. And in 69, the World Series, I played in four, and the two we were supposed to win, we lost. We were supposed to lose to the Dodgers, and we won. We were supposed to beat the Mets in 69 and lost, and we were underdogs to Cincinnati in 70 and won, and Pittsburgh beat us in seven games in 71. But just to be there and get to the World Series and win, and 1970 was something special because I was selected the most valuable player.
Can you recall having best friends on the team as an Oriole or any memorable players, managers?
Oh, I tell you, I played with a lot of great guys, absolutely. It's just going back to, guys like Dave McNally and Andy Etchebarren who were with our team, Chuck Estrada and Ronnie Hansen. Ronnie Hansen was the Rookie of the Year for the Orioles in 1960, and Ronnie lives here in town. He works for the Philadelphia Phillies as a scout. Now, he worked for the Yankees for 20-something years as a scout, but Ronnie is my best buddy in baseball. Ronnie we came up through the minor leagues together. I signed in 55 out of high school. He signed in 56, but we played together a couple years in the minor leagues. And then he broke in here in 60 and was the Rookie of the Year. And he married a Baltimore girl. And he got married like right after the season, and I got married a week later. And we've just been special friends for a long time. Chuck Estrada is another guy that I room with in the minor leagues that has been a good friend of mine. Chuck lives in California. But Jim Palmer's still here. Jim and I were together a long time. Frank Robinson came over in 66, and we really started winning games when he came here. He's the greatest player I ever played with, without a doubt, and the greatest player of all time, and right up there in the top five or six who ever played the game. That's the way I look at that. But, I have fond memories of all those guys. A couple of them, God rest their souls, have passed on. Dave McNally, about a month and a half ago, died, or 2 months ago. Mark Belanger, as fine a shortstop as you'll ever see. Mark played here. I played with him a long time. And, nobody ever fielded the ball any better than Mark Belanger, and he passed away. So we've had, some of my best buddies were starting to get old.
Was there any manager or coach that was particularly influential in your baseball career?
Yeah. The reason I signed with the Orioles was Paul Richards, and Paul Richards was absolutely the greatest baseball man that I've ever met in the game, and to this day. He knew more about the game than any manager I ever played for. He knew about each position. He knew what made every position tick. He was kind of a man ahead of his times, really, and a great baseball guy. He played for Detroit when he was a player back in the 40s. He was in the 45 World Series against the Cubs with Detroit, and then he started managing, and he was great with pitchers, and he just knew every aspect of the game. Now, the manager I had the most most success here in Baltimore was certainly Earl Weaver, and Earl was a great manager, and disrespect that he had 25 guys, and he got them all involved in the game. And that's what you have to do. You can't have a doghouse. You can't let one guy sit for 2 or 3 weeks. You've got to utilize your whole team. But Earl ran the game great. He learned a lot from Paul Richards. He was a minor league manager when Paul Richards were here. So he learned a lot from Paul Richards, too. But certainly Earl Weaver, I respect him mainly because Earl Weaver wanted to be a big league player, and never had the talent to do it. I mean, he struggled in the minor leagues. He was the most valuable player in the minor leagues, but he couldn't make the major leagues. And he went back to the minor leagues to become a manager. He went to Class D, the lowest league you can get. You can be, manage. And he started managing, worked his way up to the major leagues, and he's in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So you've got to, I'm proud of Earl, and I respect him more for that than anything else. But turned out to be a good manager, and probably gave me more laughs than anyone, any manager that I ever played for.
Do you have like a particular ballpark?
I tell you what, I like the old ballparks. I like Fenway Park in Boston and Detroit and Comiskey Park in Chicago. They just had a different feel about them. I really think Memorial Stadium was built and finished in about 1954, but it was more of a pitcher's park. But, when you get up to Fenway Park and in Detroit, where the fences are a little closer, and it makes you feel a little stronger, you know. But I always, and the fans were real close to you on the field. And this new stadium we have down here is great. It's fan-friendly, it's player-friendly, and there's no doubt in my mind it's a great ballpark. So, but I like the smaller ballparks.
Do you have any great funny stories about during baseball or any notorious incident that you can recall?
Oh, I tell you, I played with some real crazy guys. Mo Drabowski, God, and he's doing fine. He's had cancer, been battling cancer for years. But Mo Drabowski is absolutely the funniest guy I ever played with. And I mean, he was a prankster, and he was always bringing snakes or bugs or into the clubhouse and putting it in lockers like Louis Apparee. You know, a lot of practical jokers. Always giving hot foots, you know. When a reporter would be interviewing someone, he'd give him a hot foot. And in fact, I saw him giving the commissioner of baseball a hot foot one time after one of the playoff or World Series games. And he was also, I mean, he was always looking for something to do. Jackie Brandt, he had the nickname of Flaky. He was an outfielder with the Orioles, but he was kind of different too. But these guys, you know, with baseball, everyone's a little different, but we had some funny guys that did some crazy things. You're together... you know, you live with these guys for 162 games for 6 months almost, and so we had a lot of funny incidents.
Can you like tell us about any like particularly training you had to do? Like I remember reading about George Shotgun Shuba, and he used to swing a bat, weighted bat, 600 times every night.
Yeah.
Anything like that?
No, I never did a lot of training. I certainly think that baseball players are probably the worst trained athletes or the worst conditioned athletes of any of the sports. And but I did a lot of running. And I, you know, when I was growing up, the mentality was, well, if you lift weights, you're going to get muscle bound, you know, which is kind of ridiculous. But there's no doubt in my mind that when I got in my, I was 40 years old when I retired. I was the oldest guy in the league that year in 77, and I could still catch the ball and throw guys out and feel good, but I just lost the bat speed, and it came from not having the strength. I hit the ball, just wouldn't go as far. And so I wish that I would have started some maintenance program in my early 30s, and I think that would have helped me along the way, but I just never thought about it. You know, back in 1960, I got married. I had 3 children in 3 years. And I was looking for a job during the wintertime to support the family. I wasn't worried about, you know, working out or going to the gym every day. And now the money is so enormous that players, you know, they don't have to worry about that. But I was worried about making a living and not worried about too much about working out. But anyway, that's another area. And I don't think anybody has the answer. I think that all the muscle pulls you see and just people going on the disabled list now is from not training properly. And we see that all, you know, and the Orioles have really this year changing their philosophy with their pitchers, because they've had a lot of pitchers, young pitchers with bad arms, and they've trained there. They've had meetings with all the trainers to specifically, they lay down the specific rules. This is what we want you to do. And I think that a lot of these guys are overtraining. That's the reason you have so many young players going on the disabled list, all muscled up. I mean, look at Segui. Segui is, I think he's... he bulked up where he just was prone to a lot of injuries. That's my opinion.
Just with all the honors you received, like MVP of the World Series, making it to the Hall of Fame, just wondering how all that felt and which one's your favorite?
Well, I think my favorite award was winning the Most Valuable Player Award in 1964. That's the year we were about a game, I think 2 games short of winning the pennant. And it's for something you accomplished over 162 games and not just one game. I was the MVP in the All-Star game in 66 in the World Series. But I look at that as one of my favorite award. I won the Roberto Clemente Award. I think that's been changed. But that was presented to a player who best exemplifies the game on and off the field. I won that back in the 70s, and that is a wonderful award, too. So those are kind of my favorite, too.
Speaking of representing the game on and off the field, you're often referred to as undisputedly the best third baseman in the game of baseball. And from seeing some of the plays we've been looking at lately, I'd have to agree. But how's that feel to hear that? Like that you're the best. I mean, basically, that would make you the best third baseman in the world.
Well, that's wonderful. I enjoy hearing that. But I always tell people, I say, look. The best is whoever you want it to be. That's really what makes the world of sports go around. I mean, who's the best heavyweight boxer of all time, you know, who's the greatest. And it's different different decades and different players, different fields, different balls. And it's hard. I mean, when you talk about Mike Smith, I mean, here's a guy who had 500 home runs and was a terrific fielder. Eddie Matthews, the third baseman, got 500 home runs and was a great player. And so George Brett, guys like that. So, you know, if people want to think I'm the best, that's fine. But I always say, hey, look, the best is whoever you want to be. And if you think I'm the best, well, that's wonderful. I do appreciate that. That's kind of the way I handle that.
You've been a pretty good clutch hitter throughout your career. I was just wondering, with all the pressures of baseball during the game, I was wondering if you had any secrets to your clutch performance.
No, I think that I like to be referred to that. I had a 268 lifetime average. I didn't run real well, but I think that there is certain things you can do when you get in pressure situations, and I think you bear down a little more. I always felt like I gave too many at bats away. I mean, when you go up to that plate, you got to go up there with a little game plan, you know. And I went up there too many times without game plans. But I mean, you get in clutch situations, I think you concentrate a little more. You bear down a little more. Once you get that reputation of being able to knock in big runs, that's what it's all about. I mean, in the 1966 year when we won the World Championship, we had three guys that drove in over 100 runs. Berg, myself, and Frank. I think when you get in those situations, you concentrate a little more and be a little more selective at the plate. That's the only thing I can tell you.
I think that's about all the questions I've got. I don't think I've got any more.
Yeah. Okay, well,
we
good.
Really appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, guys, I'm glad y'all came out. I appreciate you coming over here. Yeah, a long drive. You got out of school a couple hours ago.
Yeah, we did.
Actually,
we
live a few minutes away, and we sleep in a little bit.
Yeah, well, a funny story. I grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, but there was a guy named David Nevins, and he went to McDonough. And this is when I knew him growing up, and he always went away to school to McDonough and everything from Little Rock, and that's the first time I heard of McDonough. And then all of a sudden I signed with Baltimore, and here I'm at the school, you know. But I've been over there a lot of times to do a few things. So, well, that's nice. Well, thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck to you. All right.
Me too.
All right, and what grade did you say you guys are in?
Seniors. Going to college next year.
Okay, where are you going?
I'm going down south, actually. Maybe you could teach me to that accent. I'm going to Auburn.
Auburn. Oh, yeah. Where you go? Okay, yeah. You got a great school. Yeah. I'm trying to think who Dickie McGee. I don't know, the McGees went to Auburn. And I think they might have been McDonough guys too. How'd you get that school?
I want to major in zoology and wildlife sciences.
Wonderful.
Yeah, but I'm also if I can, I've got hoop dreams of becoming the youngest professional umpire.
I'm proud. All right. Good. How about you?
I'm committed to NC State, but I'm on a waiting list for a prep school to go to the Naval Academy, and that's I really want to go to the Naval Academy, so I'm hoping that comes through.
How about that? Can't beat that, can you? Guys are going south, man. They're getting smarter all the time, you know?
I think so.
Yeah, well, I've been here 40 years. I've been living here year-round since 1960. But it is amazing that I haven't lost my accent, you know. I'll be standing in line somewhere, and I'll be talking to my wife or someone, and they'll turn around and they said, well, I didn't recognize you. I might have had a hat on, but I recognized your voice, you know. So you can't get away from that. Okay, thank you. Good luck to you in school.
You too.
All right, my man. That's good.